Welcome to The Art Career, a space breaking barriers by letting you sit in on candid, straightforward conversations with leading art professionals in visual arts, writing, music, theater, and film. I'm your host, Emily McElreath, and I invite you to join me for inspirational conversations with icons of our generation. We dive deep into topics like self-development, career trajectories, mental health, social justice, and the artists that have changed our lives. With each episode, our mission is to empower you, expanding your journey through the arts. Join us for new episodes every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. The Art Career is thrilled to announce its partnership with Glimpse. Glimpse Guides are a collection of luxury guidebooks with an outstanding social mission we are proud to support. Featuring the best of hotels, restaurants, activities, and itineraries for each featured city, Glimpse Guides also include recommendations and travel tips by a curated selection of tastemakers. The most exciting part of Glimpse Guides is 100% of their profits go to Give a Glimpse, which provides funding for educational travel scholarships for underserved students. What is better than that? Glimpse believe that travel is the most important form of education, and it is their mission to send as many deserving students abroad as possible. Glimpse also offers luxury trip design services with VIP perks like early check-in, room upgrades, restaurant and spa credits, welcome gifts, and more. Glimpse has quickly become our one and only travel planner. Go check them out at glimpseguides.com and tell founder Jordan Rhodes that the Art Career Podcast sent you. Natalie Baxter, born 1985 in Lexington, Kentucky, received her MFA from the University of Kentucky in 2012 and a BA in Fine Art from the University of the South in Sawanee, Tennessee in 2007. Her work has been exhibited in galleries, museums, universities, and fairs internationally, with recent shows at Denny DeMin Gallery in both New York and Hong Kong, the New York Historical Society, the Torrance Art Museum, and Supermarket Art Fair in Stockholm. She has been an artist in residency at the Wasaic Project, Stoveworks, a fellowship recipient at the Vermont Studio Center, and an IASPIS grant recipient in Gothenburg, Sweden. New York State Council for the Arts grant recipient, and twice awarded the Queen's Art Fund grant. Press for Baxter's work includes the New York Times, the New Yorker, Hyperallergic, the Guardian, and Bomb Magazine. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Emily. What's going on?
Well, we're in Wasaic, New York. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in Natalie's studio that is up the hill from her precious little house that I actually spent 3 months living in mm-hmm. when I came up here. So this is a very special spot for me, but I'm thrilled to be here with you. I love you. I love your work. I love your family. I love everything you represent as a woman. And I thought it was really important to have you on the podcast. So welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I wanted to start, you think you know someone until you really do a deep dive into their life and all the work they've ever made. But I wanted to start, I explained to you this morning, we don't really talk on this podcast about the actual work and materials artists are using. But with you, it's a little different because The narrative is so important. Would you agree mm-hmm. in your work that it's kind of impossible to not talk about material? Right. But I wanted to start with the piece you made, This Chick Needs a Good Railing.
Thought yes, that was a logical place to start.
Yeah. So tell me about that experience, because I know, you know, in this age of online bullying mm-hmm. that, you know, so many people deal with, including artists, obviously. Can you tell us the story of that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I created a body of work that that still circulates around, still gets shown, but let's see, it was probably 10 years ago that I started that this series of guns. There were these like droopy caricatures of assault weapons that was sort of exploring gender in gun ownership and really our country's sort of fascination and comfort with weapons. And so that series was, they were all made from like very colorful, floral, bright, almost like child-friendly stuffed animals almost.
That's how I was introduced to your work at Spring Break.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we met at Spring Break yeah. and I was showing that work. Yeah, it's like sadly still really relevant. But anyway, the a couple years after I made that work, I got a lot of press like on the positive side. And then Glenn Beck, who was, do you know Glenn Beck? He's like a conservative radio or was a conservative yeah. radio host guy. He has a website called The Blaze.
The Blaze.
And so this woman actually wrote an article about me that was sort of like, the gist of it was like, look at this like feminist artist in Brooklyn making these gun sculptures. Aren't they so ridiculous? And, you know, it was a negative article, but the, but what I found fascinating and what I ended up making work from was the comment section, because it was a lot of such like angry people. I'm assuming a lot of it them were men that were like comments geared at my mental state, my gender, my sexuality, my the one that like really stood out was one that said, clearly Natalie Baxter is confused about her role as a woman. So they were like it's like, okay, yeah, I'm like sitting, like literally sit around in like a pretty much like a she shed and quilt and sew things and like this, but because I was tapping into this something that's like so closely tied to a lot of people's identity, mm-hmm. like gun ownership or like this like desire to have guns or to like not want them taken away from them. Anyway, so one of the comments was, this chick needs a good railing, which I thought was really funny. So I turned them into these banners that sort of echoed banners that suffragettes made 100 years ago protesting, you know, like fighting for the right to vote. So these like women 100 years ago fighting for gender equality, but then I'm taking these like internet comments from present day and like quilting them onto these banners that are sort of like, this is still a fight that's mm-hmm. being fought mm-hmm. in a much different context.
I think that what's interesting about your work to so many people, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's rare that you have, I think we would have been suffragettes 100 years ago. My great grandmother was.
Oh, cool.
This clearly feminist liberal artist that actually makes work about the American domestic experience, right? That mm-hmm. And how you play with it and celebrate it, right? It's to and I might be botching this, right? But that's mm-hmm. for me, it's such an interesting spin, because you're not seeing that. Because I think as we progress, especially in the feminist movement, things are lost that didn't need to be lost. They just needed to be represented in a different way, which you're doing. You talk about, you know, your grandmother and these house coats, and fast forward your experience during COVID. I think that's when you started mm-hmm. making the house yes. coats. But how, you know, your grandmother was a quilter. Your grandmother was a maker. You just showed me the dolls that your grandmother made down at the house. Your grandmother very well could have been you, right? Having these comments written about her if it were, you know, 60 years later, whatever. So it's almost, do you feel fortunate to be able to represent these things with freedom now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a lot of the work I'm realizing more and more as I stay in the, like, in the fiber quilt making realm, the needle arts, as some people say, is that, like, I'm really drawn to that, tapping into these generational, like, linkages. So starting first and foremost with my grandmother, so she taught me how to quilt. And the reason I started doing the Gun series, which was sort of the first thing that I sort of dipped into in terms of fabric and soft sculpture and quilting, was because I had had this quilt top that my grandmother and I had started, and I picked it up in while I was living in New York and finished it. And then that sort of, like, sparked these ideas of, like, bringing it into my art practice. But yeah, like, with the house coats especially, it's my grandmother was somebody who didn't get to go to high school because boys went to high school. So, and you had to, like, climb, like, go across the mountain to go to high school. So she, like, did eighth grade twice because she really liked school, but that was all, that was as far as she could go. So she was a homemaker. Like, she cooked and she cleaned and she had a garden and she knew how to make stuff and cook things and like, was a very, like, domestic woman, and did a lot of sewing and quilting for people that lived along in her area.
Which was?
In Kentucky, in rural eastern Kentucky. So actually in Kingdom Come, off Kingdom Come Creek is where, yeah, in a holler. Which is funny because, like, where we are now does, I was, like, driving the other day on Butts Hollow. Have you ever been to Butts Hollow? Or like Deep Hollow? And I'm like, oh yeah, this is the same mountain range as that. And this is the same, like, the same sort of landscape as eastern Kentucky.
Yeah. You just, so.
But well, I've always been drawn to this area because of that, I think. But I was like, oh, yeah, like, these are hollers, but they're called hollows here, whatever. Anyway. Okay. But I'm digressing. So, like.
No, that's interesting, though, because I think this landscape is relevant.
Yes. Yeah.
To the both of us. So it's fun to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. But my, so what I realized during the pandemic, so I left New York City to do a long, like, a 6-month residency up here, and then ended up
at Wasaic Project.
Yes, at Wasaic Project. So that's what brought me up to this area, and that's how I ended up staying here. I'd done 2 of the residencies before, so this was, like, the 3rd time. It was my, like, I had a young child. Let's get out of the city. Let's, like, reassess in the, you know, after spending 6 months of the pandemic in a tiny apartment in Queens. But anyway, so I was up here and doing a residency. So I was going to the studio every day and sewing and quilting, and then coming home and, like, finding myself in this new motherhood role of, like, cooking for my family, like, baking bread, you know, and, like, living in this rural area. And so I started thinking about, like, how I was like, oh, wow, I'm sort of living my grandmother's life in this weird pandemic time. And that's what sort of got me started in creating that house coat series, was because she had this closet of house coats that she would put on and sort of perform these duties of the home. So, like, she's like, okay, well, we're going to be, like, when I would go visit her, she's like, well, we're going to be quilting all day. We're going to be in the house. Like, do you want to put on a house coat? And I was like, sure. Like, yeah, this is, so it became this, like, sort of uniform for house, for domestic duties. And so I'm sort of playing with that imagery of this, like, antiquated garment, but then, and using quilts and using, like, the one that we're looking at over here has, like, hospital receiving blankets, or, like, this t-shirt that you wear at the beach that has, like, a sexy, like, bikini body, but, like, maybe that's not the body that you have underneath. Like, the house coat in itself sort of, like, masks the bot, any, like, sort of part of the body anyway. It, like, makes it shapeless.
Oh, and that was probably the intention of a house coat.
Yeah.
I've never even thought about that, to actually mask.
Yeah.
Just as, like,
Hasidic Jewish women wear the wig, the dresses. Yeah, because you're not seeing – it's not sexy time when you have a house coat on.
It's work time.
It's work time.
Yeah. So that was and then same with, like, the ribbon series of these, like –
The ribbon series. I wanted to talk about that. Tell us about the ribbon series.
Yeah. So I have this ribbon over here in my studio that says Letcher County Homemakers First Place. So my grandmother and I made a quilt and it won first place in the Letcher County Homemakers Club, which is, like, a great honor. That's why I framed that first place ribbon. But so also during the pandemic, as people, mostly women, were, like, quitting their jobs to, like, take on these like tasks of caretaking and teaching their kids while schools were closed, or, like, becoming the, like, emotional support person, or the mental load all sort of, like, all fell on, had to fall on somebody. And so looking at sort of, like, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek way of, like, a little bit of encouraging of, like, hey, you're doing a good job. Like, you are the number one dishwasher. You are the number one laundry folder. But also sort of, like, highlighting the multiple different roles that mostly women had, like, left the workforce to take on in their own homes.
That are so underappreciated. Yeah. Because they're boring, right? But they're so necessary, right? It's these super necessary. I mean, talk about a tough time to become a mom during the pandemic. I just don't. Some of my friends who had, like, three little ones at home, it was just, you don't know you're signing up for that when you get pregnant, I'm sure, pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
So, yeah, those ribbons are super interesting. And I think that, you know, something about you, too, it's so funny being friends with you, following your Instagram. You are one of those women that, like, it does feel like you're doing it all, you know, like you're baking the bread, you have the two kids on your hips, mm-hmm. you're making art, you're in a great marriage, you have a beautiful home. And I think it's, like, important, first of all, none of that is real all the time, mm-hmm. you know, but second of all, to just, you know, knowing you, you know, the difficulties that come with it. I think it's safe to say it was a whole different ball game when your second child, Gordon, mm-hmm. was born. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think with Petra, it was like, yeah, one kid, you know, like, we're doing this. It was probably still super hard postpartum, but I don't know. I felt like just knowing you mm-hmm. and being closer with you, you know, there was a period of time when you had two kids, mm-hmm. right when Gordon was born, under three, where that was, I watched you fight through it to keep all of this and to keep you, you know?
Yeah.
Is that what it felt like?
Yeah. Well, I think that there is, so you're saying, like, yeah, I do all the, I am, like, somebody that enjoys the, like, domestic aspect of, yeah, baking bread or,
like,
cooking.
We also just, we all make fun of it because you're, like, good at everything. You're, like, you know, you'll, like, post bagels you made on Sunday morning with, like, the two children and you will have just finished a work of art. Yeah. And it's cute. It's
yeah, you I know, guess that's the facade of social media.
Yeah, it is the facade of social media.
But it's also, like, that fighting of, like, wanting. I do think and you're right, like, two kids is, like, extremely difficult, or, like, significantly more difficult than one. But it's, like, the fighting of, like, wanting to be in that domestic sphere, but also not, like, rejecting it and wanting it. I think that's.
Oh, yeah. What's that dichotomy
like? Well, it's, like, I do enjoy those things, but I also, like, I want the career. I want the, you know, I do want all the things. And I do think that's challenging.
Can you have all the things, Natalie? That's a question. Do you feel like you do?
I'm trying to figure that out. I think the balance with two kids is, like, is a very different balance.
Do you think you'd be in a different, because you've been very successful, you've had a lot of success, Do you think you'd be in a similar, and this is, I told you before this interview, this is a conversation I have, like Lori Simmons, when I asked her about it, you know, she was like, yes, women can do both. They can do it all. You know, I did. My kids were actually, you and Lori have a lot in common. You know, my kids were in the studio with me while I was making art. You know, your kids are in the studio with you all the time while you're making art. Whereas Roberta Smith was like, I wouldn't have had the career that I wanted to have, right? There's, you can have a career, but she wouldn't have had the career she wanted to have. This is obviously a conversation we've had. There are many layers to this, but I don't know. I mean, this has got to be something that you think about all the time, that you always have.
I think you have to think of the long game. Like, this is not, which is hard to see when you're, you know, when you have a toddler and a baby, you're like, oh my God, I just want to be in the studio and I'm not. And I want, like, it's challenging. But I think you have to remember, or I tell myself, that like, this is just a little temporary moment where like, and also I find like I've become friends with women who have a lot older kids and who are artists. And I like sort of look to them as like,
right.
They're like, this is just a temporary time. Right. Like, you're going to get past this. And like, you will learn more about yourself and more about your work through, you know, all of your lived experiences, whether those are with or without children or whatever your path is.
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like that's how I've figured out how to get through those. And also knowing like, okay, maybe I can't do as much and I can't say yes to as many things, but sometimes that's a good thing because you create more time or like space for some kind of new work to come out of that.
Yeah, that's true. We've had these conversations about what it means to be able to say no to certain opportunities. And I think both of us have been in places in our career where we were saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you need to say yes to everything. And I think there are points in life where you should be saying yes, not to everything, but to, you know, opportunities. We're both an opportunity is presented, and the reason we've had any success is because we're able to take advantage of whatever opportunity. But I think as like a career progresses, and like you said, you begin understanding yourself on a different level, there are also some opportunities that like you do say no to. And maybe that isn't even the right call, but like it's kind of like a mindset of having a mindset of abundance rather than scarcity, you know, like we've both been in that place. Like, well, what if I say no and then I never get this opportunity again? And, you know, but really trusting that those, whether it's when your kids are little, if you're not a mom and doing something else on this, whatever it is, it's trusting that these opportunities are going to continue to present themselves,
right?
Yes. Like regardless, as long as you stay on track. And I see you as, you know, a professional that has very much, you know, it's like eye on the prize, eye on the goal. Like you, no matter what's going on, right? You're in the studio. You're making the time.
Yeah. Well, I think that sometimes there's, as an artist, there's moments where you think like, oh, this is the end. Like, this is like, this is.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Like, oh, like I'm like, nobody's going to want to show my work anymore. Like you go down these like dark paths. But I think that like looking to the past of like, okay, I've been doing this for not a crazy amount of time, but like enough time to where I know that there's always something, there's always like something that's going to come my way.
Right.
Or you have to create it for yourself. You apply to some grant and then, or you do, you know, apply to some thing, whatever, some show or whatever you want to apply for. You're just like knowing, trusting that like it's always going to be coming because that's what the past has shown you that happens.
It's so hard though, you know? The Art Career is thrilled to announce its sponsorship from the New York Studio School for season 4.
Founded in 1964 as an intensive studio arts program with an emphasis on perception, artists learning from artists, and drawing as the most direct means of describing one's ideas or experiences, the Studio School offers an array of full-time and part-time programs that prioritize small classes and individual guidance from dedicated instructors distinguished in their fields. It is located in the heart of Greenwich Village in a National Historic Landmark building that was once home to the original Whitney Museum of American Art. The school invites you to join its free public programming, including the evening lecture series, which for more than half a century has been a cornerstone of the New York City art world and can now be experienced worldwide via live streaming. Visit nyss.org to enroll in classes, see what's on in the gallery, register for evening classes, and more. To learn more about full-time study at New York Studio School, schedule an in-person tour or a virtual meeting by emailing info@newyorkstudioschool.org. I love this topic because I think about this all the time. You know, we all get to these places where it's like, all right, there have been like really good things that have happened in the past. What if it's over? I always think that, you know? And then to be able to be like, well, like statistically or just to look at the facts, you know, but it's as long as we stay on track with what we're doing. I think that's the key. I think it's like there's luck and then there's hard work, you know? And
there's definitely a mentality of if you build it, they will come. Yeah. Like that's – I feel like that's – if you're making work, then it's eventually going to end up being shown somewhere or something will come from it, or a new body of work will come from that idea that maybe was really – ended up being not what you wanted to do or – yeah, so like the stuff I'm working on right now, it's actually like speaking to that lineage thing that we're talking about of like tapping into these women of the past. So like the suffragettes, like that, like sort of referencing that like notion of the past is the stuff that I've been working on recently is I've been researching Civil War quilts and how they were used as sort of signals or subliminal messages. So whether that was for like having a quilt be hanging out on a clothesline signaling like a Union soldier can sleep here, or like this is safe for Confederate soldiers, or during the Underground Railroad of like this is a pathway to the North, like this is the way that you go, or like this is, so it was really, think about the people that were making these quilts, there was women like sewing these subliminal messages into these quilts. This is like the one that we see here. This is like this bear claw quilt is follow the paths of the bear. Like follow.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow.
Or like this North Star is like follow the Northern Star to Canada, to safety, to freedom.
So these subliminal messages that most people knew.
That's what some people believe.
By community, it's just fascinating. Yeah. I didn't know this.
It's really fascinating. Or some of them were like, there's like a monkey wrench pattern that's like, gather your tools, get ready for, or there's like a wagon wheel, like get ready to prepare yourself like you're getting on a wagon to like. But my point in saying this is like these, like this like tapping into these like ancestral women, just like I'm doing sort of with my grandmother with this work, is also sort of inherent in quilting and needlework and these like domestic crafts.
I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking of something that you would think is the absolute opposite of this, but it's not. You know the book Women Who Run with the Wolves?
Yeah.
We've talked about it. There's so much ancestral power, lineage, like that dynamic in a book like that. And it's the same, you know, it's the same thing in like a completely different setting within a domestic. I mean, these women were badass, you know, they were the ones able to lift everyone up, you know, save lives, give food, you know, give signal, you know, all these power moves. Really, when you think about it, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, Petra the other day, there was like a Britney Spears
Natalie's book. Daughter's name is Petra. Yeah.
She's 4 years old. There was an interview on the radio with like talking about Britney Spears' new book. And she was like, what are they talking about? And I was like, well, and I tried to like explain Britney Spears to her. And then it turned into like talking about Iceland, the like walkout in Iceland. The women just like were like, there's, you know, sort of like gender equality fight where there was a walkout the other day. It was like the same week that this happened. And then we started talking about witches because she's going to be a witch for Halloween. I was like, pretty much women are very powerful and people are afraid of it. She was just kind of like, okay, that was way over my head. But like the same kind of idea of like this like fear of this like powerfulness. But I love that they're like, it's like women have still found this way of sort of like weaving it in to like let the message out. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Kind of like how present day, like think about all the abortion bans across the country and how like you now have to like you have to be afraid of what you're texting on your phone with like saying anything or like period tracker apps or anything. Like so now there's this whole sort of subliminal messaging or like route that you have to go through and to like physically go on some sort of route to like seek basic healthcare. So it's like there's these are like still present in these, there's like present in other ways. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
You are making a lot of sense. And I'm dozing, you know, into like another planet right now listening to you because it's reminding me of, what is that quote? I forget who it's from, but like, we're the granddaughters of the witches you couldn't burn or something like that, you know? And and this, you know, it's this cliche concept of the witch, but I mean, really, it's this feminine power that I do think underneath that anger is fear, is that masculine fear of women being, and I will say this, more powerful, because I do believe that. And I love men, you know, I really do. But it's just, you can't even compare the two. Yeah. And that's such a tricky statement. And I even feel a little uncomfortable saying it. I consider myself a witch, you know, and I just, it's a powerful thing, and the way you have interwoven that literally and figuratively, that power into the domestic space, into your artwork, is a really unique thing that wasn't lost on me. Like the second I started reading about your work or understanding your work, there was this like wicked element of female power that was almost not masked by anything. I don't know if I'm making sense.
Well, that's why when you curated me into that spring break show, what was the title of it? Female Alchemy?
Yeah, Alchemy. Yes. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. So that's always, you've always been a witch to me, Natalie. No, I really and do you agree with what I'm saying? Like in terms of gender roles, obviously we know what's changing and how far we have to go, but I think we've come really far too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like in the past like year really of since like having two children and like battling the whole, I mean maybe this is like too personal, I don't know, but it's like battling two careers, like my husband's a freelance photographer, and I feel like I found myself like sort of bowing to his schedule a little more because sometimes his schedule involves travel or like it's like somebody has to pick up the pieces when like there's always a kid that's sick or like school gets out, whatever, something happens, and somebody has to be the person that like that deals with all that. And Anyway, I just feel like I'm like, is it possible to have like an equal? Is equality possible? Like, I hope so. But like, I have not been feeling like it is recently, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
or you're saying organically, yeah. It's you, yes. Right? That
it falls on, it tends to fall, a lot of this stuff falls on the mental. This is like a big conversation about like the mental load that I think like, that I've been like talking to Josh about, and he's like sort of understanding, but like inherently they don't understand that usually. And like, why is that? Or like, why? Right. And I've had this conversation with like so many moms recently that feel the same way, or that like just recently I like reached out to somebody and I was like, hey, I know you just had a second kid and like, it's intense. And like, if you need to talk, you know, and then like, it ends up being the same conversation or the same, like, you know exactly what they're going through, where you're like,
yeah,
I know you're the stuff that's spinning in your head is like not spinning in your husband's head.
And it's not
obviously not all, you know, whatever. We're generalizing here and we're
we're generalizing, but I mean, perfect example, we were sitting at our local bar is the Lantern, and Josh left with the kids, and someone who we're friends with said, that's just so cool that Josh is taking the kids home. And I was like, what? Because you stayed and we were having like drinks and we're having a great time and you had a week and Gordon was just sick and la 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 la.
Yeah.
And I was like, is it cool or is it his responsibility? Like, should we make Josh a medal for being a dad tonight? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not Josh's. Listen, you're talking about a couple that are totally progressively liberal and amazing. And Josh is so fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, we love Josh, but it's is it possible? Yeah. Is it possible to break down? You know, I think organically what happens in our society is the man will get celebrated for things a woman does that just does, mm-hmm. You know?
It is an interesting time to like, I don't know if you've become aware of this, but it's like, there's this whole sphere of like mom Instagram people. And it's like, what I've noticed in some of them is like the pendulum that goes way the other way, where it's like, I'm subservient to my husband. I like let him.
It's all over.
It's crazy. Or it's like, it's interesting. So
here are these Amazon links and this is what I'm doing. And I'm submissive.
It's like, I'm not doing, I'm not going to like I let him like sit down after he gets off work and like relax. And I do all the cooking and all the dishes and all the homemaking. There's like that too, that
they're almost celebrating. And
yeah, no, completely. It's yeah.
That's just women that are upset that they never did anything else with their lives.
I don't know. I mean, I see that like, you know, parenting is fulfilling and like being a homemaker could be fulfilling, right. Like to some people, but like, yeah, it's harder if you want more. It's like, it's harder if you want the career and you want to do the home life stuff. Like, it's like, it's all challenging. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. So I don't know. Like, yeah. Like, would it be easier if I didn't want to go to the studio and make work and have a career? Yeah, it feels like it would be easier.
It would be easier. You would also be less alive, right?
I mean, yeah.
I mean,
for me personally, yes.
Yeah. But. Like, there's something about, well, first of all, I believe that a true artist needs to make work. Mm-hmm. It's not like a choice. Like, you have to be in your studio for, it's not just your mental health, it's just for, it's a very much a part of you.
Yeah.
Do you agree? That's just something that is. That I don't even know. I mean, that's why I can make art, right? And I can make some good art, but I don't consider myself a fine artist because I don't need to make it. Mm-hmm. I need to be doing this. You know, I need to be doing other things. But yeah, I see you. I see my partner. I see all of our friends that are artists. And it's just such a beautiful – I feel so fortunate to have all of you in my life because it's just this, you know, you're not, it's not a choice like, oh, I feel like making artwork for people to enjoy today. It's like mm-hmm. part of your DNA. Like you have to in order to survive.
Yeah, for me, it's like a way of processing the world or like processing what's happening or what's like – or what's like bothering me or what's being – what I'm being faced with is like exploring it through making. That's how I – like I'm – it's – a lot of my stuff is like very reactive to like social and political things that are happening in like the personal – my personal realm, but also sort of like this bigger picture. So yeah, that's like so when I was in Sweden, it's like when you were staying in this house, I did a residency in Sweden mm-hmm. for 3 months.
Oh, that's where the
– which has like a – so when I went there, I didn't bring all of my fabric with me. I went with nothing and ended up finding a lot of stuff in thrift stores. Mm-hmm. So that sort of started this very – like I feel like since then I've been using a lot of domestic objects. It's sort of bouncing from like doing the house coats, like – this sort of like creating a sort of uniform of domesticity. Mm-hmm. And then I started finding these like aprons in these thrift stores in Sweden and these bed sheets and using more found objects and like strictly found domestic objects. So yeah, I feel like that's like, they have this history and they have this like history in a domestic mm-hmm. sphere of like this apron that's maybe somebody made with their like by themselves and maybe they used it to like do these, perform these tasks and then sort of bringing it into this work that then creates gives it a different life.
Yeah.
So also just being in Sweden, I was also pregnant with Gordon at the time. So I had like a toddler and I was pregnant. And so I found myself like having conversations about like with other pregnant women mm-hmm. or with other mothers in Sweden. And they have a completely different approach to treating families and like paternal leave. So you get a year and a half. Even if you're like a student, you get money from the government for a year and a half.
As a woman?
Yeah, as a, like a pregnant person who's like birthed a child.
Okay.
You get a year and a half. You can share it with your partner. So you could do a year and your partner could do 6 months.
Okay.
Or you could do, you know, half, whatever you want to do. There's free preschools for kids. And then they give you a yearly stipend until your kid's like 18 to help with school or whatever you need. And so, yeah. And so they were like having conversations with me like, oh, what did you do with Petra when you were like after you had Petra? And I was like, well, I'm an artist and my husband's a freelance photographer. So we just like took some time off and didn't work and didn't make money. And they're like, wow, that's so sad. I'm like, that is really sad. That is really sad. Like, and they're like, yeah, I could just be an art, you know, like they were like in school and would get money to like, and get time off. And it was just treated so differently. Everything was like geared towards young families there. So I was like, oh, wow. Like this is, and I was also like, you know, a fairly new mom at that point. Petra was two or three or something. Two. Anyway, so just being aware of this like made me want to sort of create this work about that. So I made a lot of quilts sort of based off of these sort of using these domestic objects, and then it sort of led me to these chairs. So these are they're quilted versions of like just a chair regular chair you would sit in, but sort of that appear to be three-dimensional, but they're flat. So it's sort of this like, here, come, have a seat. Come have a seat at this table. Like, we want to hear what you have to say. But, like, you can't actually sit in this chair. And there's actually, like, there's no table, really. They're all made from, like, these bed sheets. And some of them are, like, children's bed sheets.
It's like an invitation.
Yes. It's like it's lip service. It's like, we care about you. You are the backbone of our society. Like, you, like, working mothers or, like, caretakers. Like, you're really doing... you're doing the hard work and like, you should take a rest. You should sit down. You should like be at this table where we listen to you. But like, it's like an empty invitation.
it's a total empty invitation.
Yeah.
Because it's not celebrated.
Right.
And people don't get it.
Yes. Yeah. So these, so I'm about to show these at Wasaic Project, actually, for their winter show. They're going to be sort of along the bottom of the floor as if they're an actual chair. Yeah.
Cool. We had talked about, good. I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm excited.
As someone extremely passionate about mental health, seeing a therapist is essential to my quality of life. We'd like to take this moment to announce how thrilled we are to partner with the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp. If you think you might be feeling anxious, depressed, or even just overwhelmed, being alone with your thoughts can be an isolating feeling. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It's that easy. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just for the Art Career podcast listeners, we will offer 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/TAC. That's better, BETTER, help, HELP.com/TAC. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring the Art Career podcast.
All right, Natalie, what is coming up in a couple days?
Yeah. So I got a grant to research this Civil War quilt stuff and also to create sort of a community engagement component of it. And so I got grant funding to put on a free community quilting workshop, which I'm very excited about. It's going to be at the Wasaic Firehouse on November 18th. And it's like
part time. Because for those of you who listened to the podcast before this,
yeah,
it's this Saturday, okay, in Wasaic, New York, at the Wasaic Firehouse. Mm-hmm. And can you sign up?
You can register on Wasaic's website. You also don't have to register. You can just show up from 12 to 5, like at any time. You can stay as long as you want. You can stay the whole time. You can drop in and learn how to like make a quilt square or and like make a part of the quilt. Or you're welcome to stay the entire time and see how the whole process is made. But yeah, what my idea behind that is like, and like why I wanted to research Civil War quilts to begin with, were like the Civil War was like a time when our country was very divided. Mm-hmm. We are currently in a time where our country is very divided. So, and quilts were sort of used during that time as a fundraising, an aspect of fundraising, like raising money for the effort, but also a gathering of people to actually have a conversation with, you know, which I think is what we're sort of been lacking in this sort of, you know, this post-pandemic and this internet era where like people don't talk to their neighbors as much. Like, and around here, like my neighbor, when I first moved in, she was like, if you need, you know, a cup of sugar, yeah, if you need this, yeah, if you need, you know, so, but it's hard to find those social interactions where that you get to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. It's like become harder and harder. And it's also, yeah. Anyway, so that's what I'm trying to accomplish is like, hey, this is your neighbor over here. This is your neighbor over here. And like, you're all doing this community effort together, mm-hmm, of creating a quilt.
Like this was the grant proposal that you put forward.
I think this is what I wrote, but it's what I'm hoping to. That's sort of the concept and the idea. Of
it's community building.
Yes.
It's getting back to the basics.
Yeah. Which is, as you know, one of the reasons that Polly and I started Cottage Courses that you frequent.
Natalie and our friend Polly Schindler have a, well, I'll let you tell us about it.
Yeah, just like an arts education, like a series of workshops that different artists in the area teach the skills that they uniquely figure out how to do. You know, like I have a way of quilting that's not maybe the same way as yep. everybody else does it. It's sort of like a way of, like, my grandmother sort of taught me, but then I just sort of figured out how I wanted to do whatever unique thing that I do, or what, or like,
yeah.
Or for Polly, she does a lot of paper mache and mm-hmm. like, anyway, so it's artists teaching their unique way that they've figured out how to do something. But it's also a way of, like, bringing people in this area together. So it's really about making connections and like, socializing.
Yeah, and reminding me, like, someone like me, I don't...
Emily's a big fan of cottage courses. I'm a big supporter.
I frequent cottage courses. But, you know, I wouldn't label myself domestic at all. Mm-hmm. I don't really cook that much. I'm not married. I'm not a mother yet. All these things, right? But you put me in a workshop to make, like, a fucking oven mitt, and I made this oven mitt that is hanging. I do use it. I use it when I take, like, whatever I'm heating up in the oven because I don't have a toaster, but, like, I'm so proud of it. And yeah. it brought it, you know, I would never have done anything like that. So really, like, I don't know. It's so layered, but this community you're building with so many different things you're doing, and you're bringing this joy to the community that some people didn't even know they needed, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so proud of the oven mitt I made. I'm so proud so awesome. Of the cocktail napkins, you know? And yeah. those are things that, whether they're, like, sewing is domestic or not, you know? It was like, no, that's actually rad, and I'm going to continue to do things like that. So, everyone, you should check out cottage courses as well. Mm-hmm. It's a little easier to do them if you're local, but I don't know. We're less than 2 hours from the city.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's another thing, like, that. So my grandmother, the whole, getting back to that ribbon, the Homemakers Club, that's sort of what it was. It's like a gathering of women who got to, you know, share canning techniques or, like, gardening right. tips, like these, like, little things that you learn from just talking to people.
But if you called it the Homemakers Club, your friend Emily over here would never have signed up for it. So it's just, like, evolved to cottage courses yeah. now, or the quilting workshop. No, but think about it, you mm-hmm. know, and just like your grandmother, that's really what she was doing. She was building community.
Yeah.
She wasn't, and she was celebrating the importance of being a woman with whatever freedoms that she had then, you mm-hmm. know, and what she could build then. And you're doing the same thing, but mm-hmm. in, for no fault of your grandmother's, right? A much bigger way and reaching so many more people.
Right. And that was another thing that I thought about a lot during the pandemic, where I was like, oh, my life is very similar to my grandmother's, yet this is my career. Because I'm like at right. this, I get to do this right. as, like, this isn't just a thing that I make that I get to use in my house. I mean, I do that too, but, like, this is gets to be a career because of the work of so many women before me.
I think that that's kind of a really perfect way to end, and for us to thank our ancestors, mm-hmm. you know, for affording us a really beautiful and free life.
Yeah. And we get to make it a little bit better for the next
yes.
group of witches.
Yeah. Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Art Career. If you get value from this podcast, please consider helping me make more of these episodes by becoming an Art Career Premium member at theartcareer.supercast.com. That's theartcareer.supercast.com. supercast.com. And please don't forget to rate and review. Every rating counts. Thanks so much.